I'm Susan Yawkey with VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Coming up, the UN fears for the safety of returning Syrian refugees. Americans are increasingly wary of foreign intervention.
In terms of getting involved in a conflict, the American public feels a little bit burned from the ongoing conflict in Afghanistan, the resources and lives that were spent in Iraq.
A U.S. analyst dismisses a report the Palestinian prime minister will step down. And Lebanon's Garden of Forgiveness aims to nurture peace and healing. It's all ahead. The United Nations Refugee Agency is expressing alarm at the rising number of Syrian refugees it says are returning home from Jordan. UN High Commissioner for Refugees spokesperson Melissa Fleming said today that since the beginning of April, around 3,000 refugees have crossed back into the Syrian province of Daraa from nearby Jordan. She said much of that area remains a battleground, and the agency fears for the safety of those returning. The UNHCR reports that despite the returns, at least 2,000 people are still leaving Syria and crossing into Jordan every day. By the end of this month, the number of refugees in Jordan is expected to exceed 500,000. A Syrian expert says neighboring countries, including Lebanon, are reaching their capacity in handling the influx of refugees fleeing the civil war in Syria. Sonia Kapkapte, director of the Turkish Research Program at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, tells VOA that Lebanon has already taken in 400,000 refugees, a great burden for a country of 4 million people.
No country can handle this kind of an influx. I think Lebanon is at the brim of saying this is enough.
Earlier this week, the UNHCR said the flow of aid to refugees in neighboring countries is falling short because it has only received $300 million of the $1 billion needed to handle the influx. The agency said that Jordan, Turkey, Lebanon, and Iraq have taken in a combined total of 1.3 million Syrian refugees. Fighting continued in several parts of the war-torn country today. More than 70,000 people have been killed since March 2011 when the uprising against the Assad government began. Thursday on our program, we told you about a Human Rights Watch report that says the Syrian Air Force has carried out indiscriminate and sometimes deliberate airstrikes against civilians. The research group says the attacks violate international humanitarian law. David Hartwell, an expert on Syria at the IHS Jane's Analysis Group in London, says the international community is not making civilians the focus of its agenda in Syria.
A much greater concern, unfortunately, appears to be the growth of Salafism and the growth of extremist Islamist groups in Syria as a driver for intervention rather than necessarily the huge death toll that's being taken by Syrian civilians.
Hartwell says what he thinks would be the best way to help civilians, a no-fly zone, is not on the international agenda.
The fact that there is no no-fly zone over Syria and the West has shown no inclination to try and impose one would be the obvious policy one might assume that would have some effect on limiting the ability of the regime to strike these targets in the air and cause these casualties.
David Hartwell at the IHS Jane's Analysis Group in London. Some of the U.S. reluctance to get involved in Syria, opinion polls suggest, is because after more than a decade of wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the American public is increasingly hesitant to support military intervention overseas. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has details from Washington.
Dan Lehman is with the Syrian Support Group, which raises funds and sends non-lethal aid to moderate factions of the Free Syrian Army. The group was founded by Syrian Americans opposed to the Assad regime in Syria and is trying to generate support among the American public. But Lehman says getting Americans interested in the conflict has been a challenge.
In terms of getting involved in a conflict, the American public feels a little bit burned from the ongoing conflict in Afghanistan, the resources and lives that were spent in Iraq. And so it's a little bit hard to get that large-scale galvanization of support.
That reluctance of Americans to get involved in overseas conflicts was evident in a series of random interviews VOA conducted with tourists visiting Washington from around the U.S.
Well, I think we have to be very cautious about that and very, very careful about how we go about getting into other countries' affairs.
I think they're tired of war. I think Americans never did like going to war, although we have been involved in a lot recently. Hopefully President Obama will keep us out of any future wars.
Yeah, I definitely think we should pull back quite a bit, actually, from what we've done in the past 10 years, especially for the state of the economy right now.
Most analysts will not go so far as to call this sentiment a new form of isolationism. But this hesitation to get involved overseas has been showing up in public opinion polls. Carol Doherty is with the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press in Washington.
There's a weariness after two major wars and an apprehension both about what's going on in the Middle East generally and what's going on in China. You know, they're not turning away, but there's certainly no desire on the public's part to get involved in hotspots around the world.
Dan Lehman says he understands the public's wariness of foreign military involvements, but he says it's frustrating trying to rally Americans to what he believes is a worthwhile cause.
I think it is reasonable to say that maybe the American people feel like we need to go into a little bit more of an international foreign policy seclusion. This is pretty regrettable given the conflicts that are going on in the world right now that really do need our support.
And Lehman adds he remains committed no matter what the public opinion polls say.
So even given the unfortunate and sometimes kind of dim policy initiatives that we see, we are for this cause until the end, and we're going to see it through.
A recent Washington Post ABC News poll found only 17% of those asked believe the United States should get involved in the Syrian conflict, while 73% oppose the idea. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
You're tuned to the Voice of America, broadcasting to you from Washington. We invite you to stop by our two websites, voanews.com and middleeastvoices.com, for the latest world news. This has been a busy week for the U.S. Secretary of State. Before a visit to Asia, he traveled to London for the G8 conference, and before that, he traveled to the Middle East. John Kerry wanted to show the Israelis and Palestinians that he is serious about restarting the stalled Mideast peace talks. VOA's Paul Westphaling asked our correspondent in Jerusalem, Scott Bobb, if the secretary's visit there produced any results.
The Israelis pride themselves on their hospitality, but also they were genuinely glad to see him. He had not visited during his first term, and I think there was some hurt feelings, at least, about that. Secondly, Kerry is well known because of his role on the Foreign Affairs Committee of the Senate for many years and is viewed as a friend of Israel, and he's respected. So there was all that. And then there was a genuine warmth, I think, with Prime Minister Netanyahu, and he was very careful not to step on toes. I would say probably his reception from the Palestinians was a bit less warm because they do not see the United States as being an honest broker anymore. They feel that it favors Israel. So perhaps there he had to do some fence mending. What came out is that, one, Kerry does seem to be very keen on not only getting the parties back to the negotiating table, but actually maybe achieving something. And he seems to be working on several levels. He talked about some economic incentives, easing the life of Palestinians in the West Bank, probably making it easier to transport goods in and out. But on the political front, there seems to be some major proposals being discussed behind the scenes. There wasn't much said publicly, but the Israeli officials did indicate a willingness to try to work on things. The Palestinians are adopting a wait-and-see attitude because they don't feel that Israel is budging in its positions. So there does seem to be some key, and there's a lot of U.S. officials coming in the next few weeks. So it does appear that they are definitely working hard on something.
When the Secretary of State met with Mahmoud Abbas, he repeated his position that the Israelis have got to stop building settlements before peace talks can get underway, a precondition that Netanyahu has said, no, we will not accept. Is he still sticking to that firmly?
He did publicly, and actually he put the release of political prisoners even higher because they had a very prominent political prisoner die from cancer in an Israeli prison just a few days before Kerry's arrival. So he did reiterate those positions, and there have been some indications of other what they're calling confidence-building measures, such as perhaps putting on hold the unilateral Palestinian efforts among at the United Nations and the International Criminal Court of Justice, for example, Israeli willingness to possibly release some prisoners. Netanyahu did order no settlement activity while Obama was here last month, for example, and while Kerry was here. So there, it's not moving very much at this point, but I think there's a lot of talk, a lot of talking and exchanging ideas. And the one thing that struck me was that there seems to be a very strong commitment by Kerry and probably Mr. Obama to achieve something this term.
VOA correspondent Scott Bobb speaking with us from Jerusalem. Palestinian Prime Minister Salam Fayyad is reported to have handed in his resignation after months of disagreement with President Mahmoud Abbas. Zlatika Hoke reports for VOA television. A U.S. analyst dismisses speculation that Palestinian Prime Minister Salam Fayyad will step down this week.
Long-standing differences between the Palestinian president and his prime minister came to a head after Mr. Fayyad accepted the resignation of Finance Minister Nabil Qassis last month, and President Abbas rejected it. A senior official from Mr. Abbas's Fatah party said the prime minister has handed in his resignation and that Mr. Abbas is considering it. David Pollack, a senior fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, says he does not expect Mr. Fayyad to resign. He told Al Hura Television in an interview Thursday that the Palestinian Authority will not accept Mr. Fayyad's resignation or that it will at least postpone it because the former IMF official has international support and the Palestinians need international aid.
There is an international consensus that the PA deserves to be funded. At the same time, I think that if Fayyad does resign and his resignation is accepted, that the international community will want some other guarantees that the funds from abroad will not simply disappear into the pockets of corrupt officials. And it will be important for the PA, under whatever government, to work with the international community to make sure that that is the case.
Western policymakers have offered staunch support to the U.S.-educated economist, who also has gained Israel's respect. Former Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat appointed him finance minister in 2001, and the following year he spent months with him under Israeli siege. Mr. Fayyad has been the prime minister of the Palestinian National Authority since 2007. The West has considered him a moderate leader. After initial success in revitalizing the Palestinian economy, Mr. Fayyad ran into trouble after Israel and the United States withheld vital funds last year to punish the Palestinians for seeking full membership in the United Nations. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
The Turkish government has created committees of so-called wise people made up of well-known personalities whose task is to explain ongoing efforts to end the fighting between the Kurdish rebel group, the PKK, and the Turkish state. But Dorian Jones reports the initiative is proving controversial.
The Turkish government's Wise People Initiative has selected 63 of the country's best-known personalities, from actors and writers to trade unionists and journalists, to promote current efforts to end decades of fighting between government forces and PKK rebels. Political scientist Cengiz Aktar of Istanbul's Bahçeşehir University says it could be a shrewd move.
It's a good initiative. Turkey needs to learn about it, and people are curious. Some are cautious, some are very dubious about the peace. So it's always good to talk to people everywhere in Turkey. So I think it's a very positive initiative.
The wise people have been split into groups to tour Turkey's seven regions. According to a government opinion poll, there is strong support in the predominantly Kurdish region of Turkey for the current talks with the imprisoned PKK leader Abdullah Öcalan, who last month called on the rebel group to observe a ceasefire and withdraw from Turkey. But, according to the same poll, people in the rest of the country are more divided, with only a small majority in favor of talks. The wise people have already started holding meetings with local civic society groups and political parties. Writer Sibel Eraslan says the strength of the initiative is their diversity.
Çok etkileyiciydi benim için. Yani hayatımın en etkileyici günleri diyebilirim.
The mere fact that we came together despite all our differences is important, she said. Our first meeting saw people from across the political spectrum attending. This is very positive. But the initiative has been criticized by the largest pro-Kurdish party, the Peace and Democracy Party, which claim there are too few Kurds and experts on the Kurdish conflict among the wise people. Gurkan Günaydın, deputy head of the main opposition, Republican People's Party, accuses them of promoting the ruling AK party's interests.
Adeta AKP propagandası yapmak üzere Türkiye'nin 7 bölgesine gönderilmişlerdir.
They are traveling all over Turkey to make propaganda about the AK party, he said. These artists, he added, must have one quality. They should be independent and objective. But there are serious concerns that those selected are not independent. Observers warn the whole current peace process is threatening to fall victim to party politics. In Parliament this week, there were angry clashes over the setting up of a parliamentary commission to work on the peace process. The main opposition parties accuse the government of pursuing peace for its own political ends. Political scientist Akhtar says more transparency is urgently needed.
This policy should become as transparent as possible to ensure the ownership of it. The ownership by the other political parties, but especially the ownership by the society. So therefore it needs to become transparent. We need to talk truth and reconciliation. We need to talk economic development. We need to talk decentralization, return of refugees, amnesty, legal and constitutional changes.
The government argues its Wise People initiative is aimed at addressing transparency concerns. But critics say with the current peace efforts largely confined to secret talks between the country's intelligence chief and imprisoned PKK leader Öcalan, suspicions over the talks will remain. An expert on the conflict, political columnist Kadri Gusel of the newspaper Milliyet, says even on the Kurdish side, where there appears to be widespread support for the peace process, that process needs to be widened.
Negotiations must involve and include the bulk of the Kurdish movement, which is the military wing, the legal political wing, and the PKK in Europe. Without systematic and real involvement of them, with only Öcalan, I think any peace process cannot advance.
Over the next 2 months, the Wise People will be holding meetings across the country to build up momentum for the peace efforts among Kurds and Turks. Supporters of the initiative argue such momentum is key to overcoming party political tensions and consolidating the peace process. But critics warn that without concrete steps to widen the peace process, suspicions and skepticism can only grow, which ultimately could derail it. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul, Turkey.
Lebanon's Garden of Forgiveness is a work in progress conceived by British-Lebanese citizen and psychotherapist Alexandra Aseli. It aims to nurture peace and healing in a country still recovering from a 15-year civil war of religious factions. But the garden has been beset by delays. Last month, Aseli hosted a ceremony near the garden bringing together people from all religious backgrounds to celebrate their common beliefs. Paige Kolick reports from Beirut.
The central area of Beirut, which at the end of the war was completely devastated.
Alexandra Aseli first came to Lebanon in 1966. She married a Lebanese man and raised her children in Lebanon. Then in 1975, Lebanon's civil war broke out.
During the war, I became very distressed about how is it possible that we as human beings can be from one day to another, go from nice, happy, joyful people into fighters, killers, destroyers.
So in 1988, Asali came up with the idea for the Garden of Forgiveness. It was approved and then designed by two well-known architects and is located between archaeological relics and religious structures in the heart of Beirut. Over the years, the garden became a symbol of peace. In 2005, family members of September 11 victims visited the garden. They planted an olive tree and under it buried photos of loved ones who were killed in the attacks. But in 2006, with Lebanon at war again, work on the garden was suspended. The project is still stalled because of disagreements between the developer who owns the land and a nearby Lebanese army base. Last month, during the Feast of the Annunciation, a religious holiday celebrated by Christians and some Muslims, Lebanese gathered at the Nouria Shrine, just nearby, to express solidarity. The garden is situated on what was known during the Civil War as the Green Line. At the time, it separated Christian and Muslim parts of the city. Ziad Mikati of the Islamic Christian Foundation says it's the perfect site for the garden.
This area where we have three cathedrals and three mosques around us is a sign from God to all of us that over here where the olive trees are growing and where God made the Annunciation very, very, very visible in this area, to come together and start worshiping together for one cause, which is Lebanon.
During the ceremony, religious leaders read together and individuals from sects that once battled each other recounted the pain of their wartime experiences. Asali hopes gatherings like this will keep the garden project alive. Paige Kolick for VOA News, Beirut.
Thanks for joining us for International Edition. This has been VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Join us Monday through Friday for news from the region and of interest to the region. And for more Mideast coverage, visit our website at MiddleEastVoices.com. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Thanks for joining us.